You're listening to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping you to explore the business behind your music.
Hello and welcome back to Your Music, Your Business. Today I'm joined by powerhouse music production producer, I should say, Rosie, who runs Women of Music Production Perth, or WOMP. Welcome, Rosie. So lovely to have you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
So thrilled to have you here today. As I sort of pre-warned you, I love to like jump right into the deep questions, and I know my listeners are very used to this by now. So I wanted to start off today by discussing with you the power of female-led music production and producers. As an artist manager of a female-identifying musician, it became blindingly obvious to myself and, you know, our artist team that the music industry is quite predominantly led by male-identifying producers. What do you think that the true cause of this is?
Well, I think there's a few different causes. The biggest thing is I think the space has just been taken up by men for a long time in general. And that doesn't mean that women aren't doing it. That just means that perhaps in the professional space, it's mostly men. And what we found is through our work with WOMP that it isn't that there aren't women producers. It's actually that usually they're just not calling themselves a producer, or they're not getting credited as it. Also, they tend to be working on a lot of their own music rather than other people's music. That's something that we see quite a lot of as well. And I think that will change, but it's interesting. You'll see things in like Spotify, you know, credits where you can credentials, you can go and click on a song and see where the producer is, who the artist is. I think a lot of the times those are actually incorrect. They miss people out. And the second thing is that I do think a lot of women who are putting out their own music are producing it as well, but they're just not calling themselves that.
So true. And I think like you've definitely identified the whole credit issue being one pretty predominant feature in that. There are female music producers out there, and they do exist, and they're very, very prevalent in the space. It's just, are they being credited? And, you know, as someone who at the moment is very much in, you know, the music tech world, it's very interesting to see companies like Jaxta trying to actually find better ways to actually fix music credits, because music credits is issues is not a gender issue. It's an issue across the board, which is so fascinating. But why do you think it is in particular that, you know, female identifying producers are not necessarily being credited?
I think what I've experienced, and this is just from my perspective from the meetings that we host with all the different women that come in, it's actually they aren't putting it that word to their own name, because usually they don't feel like they meet a certain criteria, I think, because they think there is a certain criteria to be a producer. And these are the types of people that are getting up and in a track sharing session that we'll have with a fully produced song that they've made. They've written all lyrics, so they've done the whole thing themselves and produced all the instrumental. And then they're like, oh, but I don't, like, they don't go to people, oh, hi, you know, I'm a music producer, when people ask them what they do. Yeah. It's not, but we try and tell them, like, what you are, like, that's what you're doing. I think, like, people think they have to reach a certain level. That's one of the things. And I think the other issue, just back to what you're saying about the crediting and why it's such an issue as well, is that a lot of this study, so the data that we're getting on music producers' gender split, is it's actually all used by, they're using the credits. They're going in, and that's how they're data researching, is they're going, and that's the problem, because it's like, where's the data actually from? The data is actually incorrect.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like both an interesting problem there, but there is still also an issue of, I think, claiming your title.
Yes.
Is something we love to empower in the sessions and as much as we can with anyone who's doing any type of writing, to be like, yeah, look, you are a music producer. Get used to it.
Yeah.
Get used to saying it out loud.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, you're so right. It's about helping to empower the narrative in that producer's head that they are enough and that they are doing good enough. And, you know, a small part of me does wonder, you know, how much of that is connected to the introduction that young people have into music producing and at what age. Are you finding that some of the people that are coming to you that aren't confident are coming from, you know, maybe different socioeconomic backgrounds, or they, you know, haven't necessarily had the opportunity to have formal or supported training necessarily?
That's definitely an issue, because you've got school programs now that are around, or different schools at different levels that are teaching kids from younger age. But obviously, if there's a certain schools, rural schools, schools in the public system that maybe don't have budgets to get people in to do these programs, and also these people aren't, like, we've done things like this in the past, these types of school programs, but there's not heaps of people out there doing this kind of thing. So for schools to have, you know, the time to even research these people and bring them in to do these programs, that's actually pretty rare. And that does mean, yeah, you get a lot of people coming to it later in the game. Also, they might not realize that the free trials thing is possible, because so these, a lot of these programs are really expensive. So yeah, there's definitely people coming into it later for all kinds of reasons. But that doesn't mean that it can, they're not going to become a music producer and be really good at it. It's just, yeah, sometimes it is later in the game. And I do wonder as well with also maybe boys being more into that tech space earlier. Maybe that's a thing with computers. Like, I don't know. I don't know the statistics on that. But what I do know is that is changing, because, at least from what I see, because I have way more younger students that I'm teaching music production to now, and it's treated as a musical instrument now in schools. So you can, yeah, you can choose a lot of schools now. It's, you know, we're getting there. But things like saxophone, violin, percussion, music production, like, that's, you can go and have music production lessons at school now in some schools. And I think that's going to, it's as also the contemporary music schooling criteria changes, we're including more of these things. The, what is it called? The, called SCASA, I think, for, I don't know if it's for WA. Anyways, this is the schooling, you know, who decides the curriculum.
Yeah.
Basically, I think they're realizing now that that's actually a very important part of music, contemporary music and electronic, you know, music production. So, yeah, I'm sure it's going to definitely change. I've got so many young kids getting into it. It's awesome.
That's so inspiring and, like, very exciting to see, because it like, as we sort of touched on, like, it all has a ripple effect. Like, because these, you know, people are, we have whole generations coming through that are having a mixture of that introduction early to music production, and then others that don't. It'll be very interesting over the next, you know, decade to see the ripple effect of that. And then, should, God forbid, we get extra funding to go towards, you know, that sort of space and seeing that growth, it will be very fascinating to see. Because I know, even for, you know, the artists that I manage, we had different experiences with different producers, and one of the biggest draws that we had with a female identifying producer was that my artist could connect with her and had similar communication styles, and she just, like, absolutely loves to, you know, make music with her, and resonates with her so much, more so than any other producer that she's ever connected with in the past. And it was like, okay, this is obviously such a beautiful connection that we need to be nurturing. And it's very, very exciting to see that there's more of that coming through, and ripple effect that's going to have on the whole industry realistically.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about that communication and that openness that this artist was feeling, because I've felt that too myself. We've noticed that in the meetings as well, and in studio sessions with myself and Elise, having just that more vulnerability. I think it's interesting. And I think that's something that, as women, we just are quicker to jump to with people we don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not that I haven't met men that can do that too, obviously, but it's something about as well having let's say a group of women in the studio and talking and then being vulnerable and showing their music, or they've never shown anyone before. And then just that the energy that's in the room together is so inspiring, because people are like, oh, I'm so supportive of this, you know.
Mm.
And that is so important for sparking the creativity, and especially in a studio session when you're trying to pump out tracks and get work done. That's so important.
So
and simple. Yeah, and that was also the basis behind why we've been really working towards these songwriting camps that we're running. Our second one starting next week is because of that energy in the room. We're like, we've got to harness this more, like we need to share this more, let's do more of that.
Yeah, definitely. Now I want to jump to the camps a little bit later on. At first I really want to get to, like, at the core of who you both, like Rosie and Elise, are, who run WOMP. What was the reason that you wanted to build such an organization?
Yeah, well, it started out with this funny thing that we noticed in the music scene in Perth. We were playing in our band together, Feels, and we just noticed that there weren't many women on the lineups that we were playing in, these electronic music lineups. That was it. That was honestly like the biggest reason. And we were like, cool, I know they're out there because I knew some other women producing and making their own music. But I was like, why aren't we seeing them? What's that all about? So, and there started to be this conversation in the music industry about, you know, where's the female producer and what's going on there? So we were like, okay, why don't we just invite a bunch of people to our studio and then, like, get together and talk about music production, and maybe we can figure it out together. And so we just invited a bunch of people on Facebook and, like, friended people, invited them to an event, and, like, absolute randoms. But people, I was like, I think they're into something. I think they're a friend of a friend. And then these people actually came, which was awesome.
Because
we were like, I know, I said, like, we'll provide wine and cheese. And they, you know, came, which is cool.
Yeah, as anyone would.
Exactly. You put the wine and the cheese out the doorstep. Yeah. And he ended up with just this really beautiful group of people that were willing to share their experiences, some of all different levels as well. You know, some of them had been DJing for years, but they wanted to get into the music production space. Some of them were produced, like just started producing, and were like, oh my God, like I've never met any other women producing music. So that's where it was like, whoa, okay, there's something here. Every month we did it, more and more people came, and we were like, okay, see, look how many people there are, like this is a thing. And this started with like 6 people, and now we have over 700 members across the country, and it's just from this like Facebook event basically where it all started. And yeah, so it's now, yeah, as I like mentioned before, with like the camps and stuff. So we started with this really small just monthly meeting thing, and now, and then it's had all these other iterations of, you know, how we come together as a group. But that was the main thing, was the lineups, just being like, what's going on there?
Yeah definitely. And I think like that is definitely something we're seeing, a very interesting change in across the music industry at the moment, and have seen for the last 5 years in some sort of significant way. But there's also a lot of like initiatives that are trying to put more, particularly in the electronics space, more female voices to the front. Which is very exciting to see. I've always really loved that personally, and building networks of women, particularly within the music industry, is something I'm very passionate about as well. And you know, totally resonate with you when you start talking about like the idea sharing and the peer evaluating basically, or assessing and looking to your peers and going, you know, how are you, what are the experiences that you're having, like the value of that, no matter your gender, is so valid in the music industry, because it is so hard.
yeah and that's it. I think people forget about community sometimes when you're in the industry, because it's like, it is a really difficult industry to be in. You also, when you're say an independent artist as well, you're just focusing on, okay, let's write the music, get the music, lyrics, music produced, or everything. Then we need to mix and we need to master, and then what about the brand and the photo shoot and the gig? And then it's like all of a sudden this stuff is happening, but maybe you're like, oh, I don't even know who my community is, like who are my other artists out there. Like maybe what you're missing is some collaboration and you don't realize it, or maybe you want to form band members but you're like, I don't even really know the right people. And we get a lot of people coming and then talking about that, being like, oh, I was so focused on, you know, just me and my solo project for so long that I didn't realize what I was missing was community.
Yeah.
Opening up to that, and then that inspiring them to continue, because as you said, it's tough to do on your own.
Yeah, definitely. I also sort of want to ask further to that then, you know, you've also built off the back of that success a label, a booking agency, and an Ableton user group community, which I'm sure the music industry, the artist managers and all that sort of thing find that so fascinating. An Ableton user group, it's fantastic. Those are all three very different aspects of the music industry. What made you want to extend to those avenues?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just came naturally. It was a bit of an obvious, like, oh, why, we should do this, we should do that. As I said, we started just with the meetings, and as that started happening, we were predominantly using Ableton, and we still do, to give workshops at our sessions. And we actually just emailed the company and we're like, hey, we're doing this thing. We think, you know, we're interested in what we can do together. Is there anything, are we a user group? Because Perth didn't really have one at the time. And they got back to us and were like, oh, we love this, we want to support it. And then we ended up becoming the first, apparently, all-female Ableton user group in the world, which is cool.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that's amazing. And, yeah, they're very supportive of what we do, which is great. And so that was all happening. And then as we started putting on gigs, people started coming to us and being like, hey, you know, just want to put it together a lineup or something. We started doing that. So that's when the booking agency thing kind of came in. Mm-hmm. And then we were like, well, we should just make it a label as well, because, you know, money in the industry usually just goes if you start having all these different label over here or your music going somewhere. We were like, why don't we just service it all through Womp and then have other artists we can bring on and get their music out if we love and support what they do. Why not have it under Womp? And it's like, just become a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. And like that realistically is the reality of the music industry and a lot of music businesses, that particularly like labels, and I was about to say small labels, but I don't want to put that on you. It's
technically small, yeah.
Yeah, technically yes, but like labels that aren't the big three is what I want to try and get at. You know, have come from a space of having a pain point and you know, building into something that they ended up in eventuality building a label because it just made them the most sense, and that it's, and they find it really hard for it to just be a label, just as you have, like making a booking agency and an Ableton group. There is so much space in the music industry for innovation.
Yeah, and there has to be, I think, especially I mean, in a city like Perth, where you can't really just do one thing because it's not really big enough to do that. You can't really earn enough money to just writing the music or just running, say, a label or a booking agency. Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to do all these different bits and pieces to make it work. And that's, I'd lucky just because I myself and Elise love working that way. It's just keep it interesting, right?
Yeah.
But it's awesome though, because that's, I think, why Womp has, why it still exists today, even though we started it in 2017, and why we're pushing it even further. It's not the path that I thought that I wanted to spend the most of my time on. I thought it was performance, but it's funny, it takes a global pandemic and a bunch of things to happen and you're like, oh my god, that is a rough space to be in, because there's no guarantee, you know.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee in any of it, but if you have a bunch of things,
smart, exactly. Diversity, baby. That's exactly what I think this podcast has literally taught me, is every time I try to introduce someone, I'm like, oh, I need to breathe through half of this intro.
Because totally.
Had to be diverse, which I think is such a beautiful pro of the industry, but then also like highlights such a very significant con in the industry as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, one that I'm not going to touch today. As much as I would love to. There's a whole other episode into that. Yeah, too deep. We're just...
I just say that I completely agree, and yeah, it's dangerous territory.
Yeah, dangerous territory. Now, it seems that out of your passion for building community networks, skills, and talent came your WAMP Writers Camp. It's a fully funded 3-day writers camp from the 12th to the 14th of July that's coming up in Perth. There's some really great high quality artists on board to mentor this year, like Stella Donnelly, Jaguar Jones, who I love. I saw her at Big Sound. It was amazing. And Sparrows. What are you most excited about with these mentors, and what are you hoping that they can bring to the table?
Yeah, well, it's really about the energy that they create in the space. It's because it's different every time. I mean, although we've done it one time before, our experience with bringing in these mentors and specialty artists, we've had this over the last few years with WAMP, was bringing people in for meetings, like whether they were on a tour and we, like, you know, would hit them up and be like, hey, we'll see you in Perth. Like, can you come to this meeting? You know, we'll pay to come talk about what you do. And there's something that happens with someone who just has experience and is so willing to share everything they know with a group of people. And it's just an electrifying experience. And so I just can't wait to have all three of them in the room together, in the room with the artists, and then creating something like that. Yeah, it's just magical. It's super inspiring as well, just watching it, like not even being a part of it, facilitating it is, so energizing. It's so cool.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very excited to see what it's like and what each of those artists bring. They're all very different and unique artists in their own way and have such different stories and different narratives that they tell online, and then obviously that they'll share like offline. So it'll be very fascinating to see what they do share. Now, your camp doesn't just like assist female, transgender and non-binary music makers in their artist development, but it also supports in technical production and music development for artists also. Why was that important for you both to build with that within the events?
Yeah, it's just that thing that we've had with WAMP about not just creating the connection, that are actually about skills development, because that's kind of number one, what we're all about is building on that, because I think that's the action. You know, there's like a lot of talk, and there has been for years now, about, like we were talking about earlier, like the problem of, oh, where are the women or where are the producers? And it's so fine to like have those conversations and talk about all of this, but what's the action? That's what we always talk about. We're like, okay, but what are we doing about it? If we're not just going to complain about it online, like we want to do something. And so the action was like, well, why don't we just like try and teach people just what we know, and then we'll keep learning, and then we'll teach them, and then they'll teach someone else. And that's how we'll get more women involved. And so I think, all of the events that we do, we always try for there to be a skills development part of it. Just like, hopefully that's our bit of action.
That's amazing. And I think, like highlighting that strength in networking, and the fact that, like, on top of all those skills and giving them an understanding of how the music industry works, it's the networking to then take all of that and actually excel it into the industry, and have some of these, like, particularly even these mentors, really be there as like a touch point for them as their career grows, because that in itself can be probably one of the most lasting experiences that you'll actually provide them.
Totally. You never know where that can go.
Yeah.
And for some people, it's the first time not only that maybe they've worked with a artist of that caliber, but perhaps the first time they've even worked with anyone in a studio, full stop. And so not only are they getting that experience of, you know, being collaborative with other people, but then also having someone that's like, yep, I've seen things, I've done all these things, and I'm going to just help, you know, procure this environment. And I think that's so cool for the artist. And then also just simple things like being able to say, maybe coming out of the camp and putting it in your bio, like, I did this thing and I worked with this artist. Like, let's be real, that's important. That's important when you're applying applications for things, you know, getting grants, like all the things that we need to do as artists or people in the music business space. It's like, that's actually valuable.
Yeah, so, so valuable. And I think like it keeps on coming back down to, for me, as this saying that I probably shouldn't say, but I refer a lot of to a lot of people in the music industry as like name sluts. Because I just get so like overwhelmed and so giddy when you like name drop to them and you're just like, really?
Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah. That whole name dropping in general is hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It's like important in, you know, in writing, and it's like you got to do it in your grants and in your bios, and that's also something that we try and talk about in our want meetings, especially when we try and touch on different subjects, not just product like music production itself, but a lot of times music business, or you know, how to market yourself as an independent artist and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of it is like, yeah man, you got to talk yourself up.
Yeah,
you know, you got to write a solid bio that you can send out to people and be like, this is who I am. And sometimes you got to do that name dropping, you know,
to get people to actually pay attention. Because yeah, we are so, we're an industry that's so enraptured with that. And I think, you know, realistically, you can place it back down to the fact that we do that because it's very hard to validate other successes, because everyone's music journey is very, very different. So we've now like very predominantly, and like it's been going on for years, but it's more so happening now, tying our worth to our networks, which is something that as I build my career, and I'm sure you find the same, it's like, it's amazing how like the strength of networking can be, but then also amazing how much it like almost unhealthily relies on it.
Yeah. Definitely. And it is one of those things where you're like, I guess we just have to go with it.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. This is how it's working right now. And like, maybe that'll change.
Yeah.
But whatever works.
Yeah. So, so true. And it's about like seeing, I think for me, I'm going through a bit of a journey where it's like, I went from, you know, sitting in a uni course multiple years ago going, like, I keep on going on about networking. Like, why is this important? Like seriously, like you're giving me the knowledge. I should be able to build whatever I need without the network, or like however strong my network is. To now like seeing the power of networking and the, you know, that growth and the reality of what networking provides us. But then also questioning that when you go and hire people and go, okay, well, am I hiring them because of the network that they've placed on their bio, or am I hiring them because they're actually qualified and they know what they're doing?
yeah, that's the question, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or am I hiring them for both? That's ideally the sweet spot.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no, I love that.
It's definitely a very interesting space in the music industry, and I've found when I've tried to personally translate that in a mentorship space to musicians, it's very hard to like give a quantitative like understanding of exactly what strength and power network your network will have for you and your career.
Oh yeah, it's so hard, because you kind of sound, I've done a few talks like that to like students, or and I'm like, kind of feel like the crazy professor, like smacking the whiteboard being like, networking, like community. Like, they're like, whatever man, I just want to like write beats or like play gigs. And I'm like, I get that, I agree. But also, yeah, it's exactly like who you surround yourself with, or who your colleagues are. They know that the people you're, say, in, if you're studying music, the people you're with are your colleagues right now. Yeah. Like you're that is the industry. It started already.
Yeah.
And building on that and building relationships, it's so important. And I feel like even though I've been doing WAMP kind of the whole time that I've been pursuing my own music writing and artistry, I've almost just realized the importance of it in the last few years.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of hit me.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that was because of there being a pandemic and there being such a massive shift in the industry and what we knew it to be and what we wanted to be. They, it's all changed, the landscape's changed. And then we were kind of only left with like talking to each other about it and just being like, whoa, like, what are we going to do? What's happening? My path has shifted. And then that gave us, I mean, gave me at least so much confidence to be like, yeah, everyone's feeling like this.
Yeah.
Let's like lift each other up. And like that, now looking back on that, I'm like, that was super powerful because it was really easy, I think, at that point to just go like, I'm done here.
Yeah. Which is like, that's huge and huge power to you. That takes a lot of like grit and power. And I think it's a reality that most people have really considered in the music industry, particularly in the last 3 years. And you know, some of us are not here because of that, you know, reality, or like, you know, some and we've lost good talent to that, or like myself, like I think I've questioned it 3 times as to why I'm still in the music industry. But I'm still here, baby.
Yeah. I feel like if you're doing it right, you're constantly questioning it. That's a good sign. Yes,
thank God.
Yeah.
See, that keeps validating it to get you every time.
Literally.
And I think like that's been one of my biggest things with the mentorship with artists, and like you know, when we come across that and we you know, validate and we go, okay, well, what is the networks there? It's like helping them to be empowered to find the skills that they need within themselves to be better at networking. Because I think the industry does a really great job of being like, you need to network, but not actually teaching anyone how to network, which is so, like, it's the key that actually opens up the door.
Yeah, that's so true. I know, and that's the thing. It's like, God, how many different things do you need to have to do well to as an artist? Like, that's a lot of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then also the networking and the charisma about it all, and like, oh my God, it's crazy, isn't it? But that's actually what makes it so fascinating, I think, is that aspect, having to do all these different things and maybe be put in those positions where you're like, okay, I've got to connect with people, I've got to try and have these conversations, I've never met you before. And then especially like take that exact situation, put it in the studio. It's like, never met this person before, we're about to write a song.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. That's a crazy thing to do with someone you've never met.
Yeah. Not many industries do that at all. So it's a strength and a power of the music industry.
Yeah. And I love that. That's what's so exciting. Cause like, I'd love it how you like having that like icebreaker kind of conversation. Oh, what did you say? And then you're like, anyways, like, let's get onto a songwriting topic. Like, what's your trauma? You know, people are just suddenly like, any heartbreak recently?
Yeah.
That's a good topic.
my favorite topic from the artist right now is, so you're very happy in your relationship. What are you going to write about?
Yeah, you got nothing.
Got nothing.
What bad stuff has happened to you recently? Nothing.
Actually, I have they're sort of friends. I don't know. Like, I've met with them a few times, but they used to be in a relatively popular band, and they decided to disband. They were one of the COVID bands. COVID got them. They're no longer a band anymore. But one of them and their partner decided to create their own band, and they called it Sick Visor. And I would totally look them up. They are such a bundle of energy, and they've just approached their music, like their music branding and everything, so differently. But they actually have a song that like is literally about, I can't write any sad songs anymore because I'm in a happy relationship. And it's just like gorgeous to see. But they like, they take the mickey out of it, and they like throw cake at each other. Like, it's a brand that's also memorable. Like, I don't actively listen to them, but I know who they are. I know how to engage. I know what the story and the novel is. And I think, like, there's obviously a space for heartache and all that, but there's some very interesting new territory, I think, being built into those happy songs about actually being in love and it actually being positive.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And it's also like that whole thing of like, does there have to be the meaning? Like, or does it have to be this emotional meaning? It's like that thing with tattoos, right?
Yeah.
But like, what does it mean? What does that mean? Like, it's just cool, like picture of a sword.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know, the justification of it all. And that's, we found that, I found that hard, like early on with Elise, because we originally started just writing instrumental music. So we're both percussionists as our background. And so everything was just like just about the beats and about the rhythms and like cool time signature and like just like nerding out basically on some like uneven time signature groove. And then when we were working with some of the people in the industry, they're like, yeah, but like, okay, what are we going to say about the song? What does it mean? We're like, what do you mean? It's just like this thick. Like, they were just like, oh, I think people would get like, we can't sell that idea.
Exactly. Like,
it's not about some emotional thing. And I don't necessarily believe that, but sure, I think it's absolutely easier probably to market something that's got a deep emotional thing that people can connect to. But I might also sometimes it's just about the enjoyment of writing the track or the nerdiness of, you know, the production in it.
But, yeah.
I mean, that's like, you got to sell stuff. You got to sell your music somehow. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And I think, like, part of the reason why we see that so much as well is because as an artist manager, like, I've literally had conversations with my artists being like, okay, well, we're picking between two songs. Which one has the better narrative and that you feel is stronger? And it's like, well, let's pick the one that's more easily marketable, or that you have an idea of, like, the music video that you want or a look that you want, and, like, you can envision that a lot easier than us having to try and sell the fact that you just, like, nerded out on this song.
It's a good song.
Yeah. Good song,
man. Yeah. And, yeah. It's just, it makes total sense, though, because, like, I think switching, that's the artist, right? The whole, like, well, it's just, like, I love it, and I had fun making it. But then switch sides as the person who's marketing, or actually as the consumer, people just connect with things that they have experienced or they understand.
Mm.
And a lot of people, like, that more nerdier stuff goes over their head. So they're like, I don't know what that is, so I don't connect with it. Or, yeah, like, they need something deeper. And I think that's just, like, a human experience thing. It's like we like to connect with things that we know. And I get that. I totally get that too. Yeah. I don't know.
Exactly. And then, but then, like, you know, the power of social media now is we're also seeing, you know, this space now where people don't necessarily get it, but the whole marketing campaign is to teach you how to get it.
Yeah.
Understand the nerd, which is so fascinating to see.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, all those, like, breakdown videos, people explaining all the bits and pieces behind it. It's cool. A little bit of, like, education behind the scenes. Yeah. Of, like, this is how I made the song and this is why you should care about it. That's genius. I know. Yeah. It's like the never-ending changing landscape of getting your music out there and getting it heard. It's a crazy industry to be in.
Oh, yeah. Forever adapting. Gotta love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, my last question for our episode today is one that I give absolutely everyone who joins the podcast, and that is, when you're 90 years old in a retirement home and wanting to brag to your room neighbor about what you did during your long life, what would you like to say to them?
Oh, wow. That's cool. I would probably say to them that I got to start a band and a business with one of my best friends, and it took us on some of the craziest adventures I would ever have imagined. That's probably it.
Amazing. I love that. That's so good, and it sounds like you've already, you know, accomplished so much of that, so I can't wait to see what you actually accomplish, you know, in the next however many years you've got until you're 90. So
we're just gonna keep going. That's what we said.
Exactly.
And I plan to never stop this, like, even after all of the the challenges of the past few years, we were like, it's just a never-ending path. We'll just keep going.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It was so lovely to have you. And if any of our listeners are interested, go check out Womp and their writers camp. Hopefully you could potentially get in before that July writers camp. But if not, make sure you follow them. They've obviously got something going on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.